Hi, Women of Strength. Before we jump into today's episode, I just wanted to share something that's really close to my heart. If you're planning a VBAC or even just starting to think about one, you don't have to piece everything together on your own. You don't have to find every blog or hunt down a specific podcast episode. The VBAC Link Parent Prep Course was created by our founders, Julie and Megan, who are doulas and VBAC moms themselves. I actually took it when I was preparing for my own VBAC, long before I was a host of the podcast, just as a mom who needed clarity, confidence, and evidence-based information. So I can say, from a personal standpoint, that I know you'll love it. We also have a VBAC birth plan guidebook with a drag and drop template, and that's the exact template I used for my own VBAC birth. It made communicating with my care team so much more smooth. So if you're looking for practical, supportive VBAC prep from people who truly get it, you can find both the course and the guidebook at thevbaclink.com. All right, let's get into today's episode. Hi, Women of Strength. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I'm so excited for today's guest, Irene. She's going to tell us such an amazing VBA2C story and talk a little bit about placenta previa. We're so excited to have her. But before we get into today's story, Paige has a review of the week.
I do. Okay, this review is from Apple Podcasts, and it was sent in at the time of recording just a month ago. And it was from Cedar Sun 7. It's titled, "I Got My VBAC," in all caps, with two exclamation points. It says, "Listening to these stories and learning from all of these amazing women played such an immense part in attaining my VBAC this year. I had a home birth and felt like I brought in the strength of all the women's stories I listened to with me during those moments of doubt during my birth. Thank you to the creators of this podcast and the strong mothers who share these intimate stories with us. My life is forever changed." Short and sweet, but Cedar Sun 7, we share the same sentiments. This podcast has, personally for me, forever changed my life. And Lily and I are so honored to continue the legacy that Megan and Julie have started. And they were in our ears as our card doulas back in the day. And so it, like I said, is just such an honor to carry that on. And we're so excited to have Irene here with us to hear her story. And if you haven't yet, head over. You can leave a review for our podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And we do love hearing them so much. It gives us so much joy. And it also helps women find the podcast. So if the podcast has helped you in any way, head over and leave a review.
Hi, I'm Lily.
And I'm Paige. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast.
We're moms and doulas who know firsthand that birth after cesarean isn't always straightforward. I'm a miscarriage and ectopic mom who went on to have a hospital water birth VBAC.
And I've had two CBACs and a planned maternal assisted cesarean.
Our experiences may be different, but our mission is the same: to make birth after cesarean better.
On this podcast, you'll hear powerful stories of VBACs, repeat cesareans, and CBACs from women around the world.
We'll also bring in expert insight, practical tools, and encouragement to help you feel informed and supported as you plan your next birth.
Whether you're preparing for a VBAC, choosing a repeat cesarean, or simply exploring your options, this space is for you.
Because every story matters, and we're here to remind you that you've got options, you've got support, and you're never alone.
The VBAC Link is storytelling by nature. The stories on this podcast do not represent a universally best or safest option for everyone.
This podcast is intended to encourage and inform. It does not replace individualized advice from a qualified medical provider. All right, my friends, well, we get to get into an amazing VBA2C story. Before we do, I'm just going to read to you a little bit about what Irene says about herself, and then we're going to hand the floor over to you, lady. We're so excited to hear your story. So Irene writes that she completed an unmedicated VBA2C this year, so 2025, following a pregnancy with full placenta previa, but otherwise healthy and uneventful. She started her pregnancy journey at a new practice who were not VBAC supportive and had told her to schedule her C-section at her very first appointment at 8 weeks. Oh, man. She switched providers at 20 weeks, and she owes her successful unmedicated VBAC to the many different people and routines she incorporated into her pregnancy. I'm so excited to hear your story, friend. So the floor is yours. Tell us about all the things. We can't wait.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, there's a lot. So my first pregnancy was in 2019 after a long bout of infertility. And so she was very much a wonderful miracle baby. And it was a wonderful, healthy pregnancy, smooth as could be. And I didn't know this about myself, that I cook my babies late. So my doctors around a little bit before 41 weeks started encouraging me to consider induction. And then I went in for a fetal stress test and an ultrasound, and they saw that there may have been low fluid. So they suggested an induction. Now, leading up to this, I didn't know anything about inductions. I hadn't really prepared myself very much. I thought you go to the hospital and have a baby. I had only read one book and I took one birth class. So I thought I knew what I needed to know. I didn't think about asking any kinds of questions. And my doctors never mentioned that inductions could be stressful for babies and end in cesarean. So I went in at 41 weeks and 3 days for my induction, and about an hour into it, my little girl went into stress. So they gave me oxygen, tried moving me into different positions, and it wasn't working. So my doctor said the safest next move would be to go in for surgery. So that's what I did. Luckily, she was healthy and fine. Then at 10 months postpartum, I got pregnant again. And I was so excited that, you know, she was going to have a little sister joining us. So immediately I wanted to try a VBAC. And my providers were supportive, although no one gave me any resources, nothing to read. I hadn't heard of the VBAC link. Oh, and I should add that I've used the same doula for all three pregnancies. And she was amazing.
Well, that's really special.
Yeah, she was incredible. And I just love her so much. So she was really supportive. She tried giving me some more resources, but the VBAC link never came up. So while I was reading things like Ina Mae Gaskin's Guide to Childbirth, I still wasn't getting any information from the perspective of someone who's had a VBAC. So around 40, well, I had prodromal labor for about a week, and then I went into labor at 41 weeks and 5 days. And it was long but consistent. I was awake through that night, and then late into the next day, I went to the hospital. I was 5 centimeters when I arrived. So I was really excited about that. I was like, yay, we're doing this. And right when I got to the hospital, I believe I may have started entering the transition stage because I was vomiting and I couldn't catch my breath in between contractions. So I thought, I'll get an epidural so maybe I can get some rest, because at this point I was really tired and my doctors had discouraged me from eating. So I got an epidural, but that slowed everything down. And it turns out I didn't get any rest because I had doctors coming in throughout the night to check on me. So in the next morning, they checked me and I think I was only like 8 centimeters dilated, and they wanted to break my water and give me Pitocin. And I was really nervous about that because I had heard before that Pitocin can increase the risk of uterine rupture. So I was hesitant. We tried different moving around. I had some mobility, but not a lot, but that wasn't enough to really get her into a good position, I suppose. So they did end up breaking my waters, giving me some low Pitocin. And then that afternoon, they told me I could start pushing, but I didn't feel the urge. But we tried anyhow. And in total, I pushed for about 5 hours that day, but having taken little breaks because I was just so tired and they weren't letting me eat. I don't even remember if I was drinking anything because, you know, they say that they don't want you to choke up on anything if you do end up going in for surgery or what it may be. So around 9 o'clock that night, I was just so tired. My doctor seemed kind of checked out. She wasn't particularly enthusiastic that I was going to be able to pull this off. So she started talking about having another cesarean, and I really didn't feel good about that, but I was also exhausted. I hadn't slept in over 24 hours. I was famished. So I agreed to that. And when my little Lucy came out, she was big. She was 9 pounds and 9 ounces with the biggest noggin I've ever seen. And my doctor does think that it probably had something to do with her head size, but it could have also been that I was just fatigued. I wasn't getting into positions that were conducive to her moving down, to my body being able to work to its fullest potential. So I had some pretty bad postpartum depression after that experience. My poor husband was pretty traumatized. He was nervous about the idea of having another baby because he was understandably really shaken and worried that all of us were going to die at some point or another. But we did. We got pregnant and last spring, and we had moved to a new town, not too far from the hospital where I had given birth before, but we were closer to another hospital. So I joined that hospital's care. And at my 8-week appointment, I excitedly shared that I wanted a VBAC after 2 cesareans. And before they had even given me an ultrasound or a pelvic exam or anything, they were like, "That's pretty unlikely. If you haven't delivered vaginally before, you probably won't be able to do it. Your pelvis is probably too small. There's all of these risks, including uterine rupture, but no one ever really described what that would be like, what it would feel like, how I would know. And they just wanted me to schedule my cesarean. And I left feeling pretty gutted, but knowing in my heart that I could do it if I was just given the chance. And so more appointments kept coming and going. I found myself trying to bargain with my providers, and I'd get the same thing. Your babies are big. You go past your due date. Well-intentioned.
How big was your first daughter? Sorry. I know your second one was 9 pounds. Was your first daughter bigger too?
No, she was 7 pounds, 8 ounces.
Oh, so they're saying all your babies are big, except they weren't. Mm-hmm. That's so frustrating. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. Very frustrating. And again, they didn't know me. I'm perfectly healthy and, I'm hearty stock. Like, I knew I could do it. Well-intentioned loved ones just kept telling me, well, if that's what the doctor says, you should just do that. And I didn't feel good about that. So I went ahead and hired my doula a third time because I knew I was going to be in for a fight. And I knew I would need all the support that I could get if I was going to stay with this practice. And she encouraged me to switch providers to a very VBAC-friendly hospital in Rochester. And I didn't want to upset my doctor. I didn't want to offend her or cause any tension because I knew that after this pregnancy, she would still be my gynecologist. And I didn't want any, I didn't want to fracture our relationship, what little relationship we had. Then I had my 20-week ultrasound, and it showed a complete placenta previa. So I was surprised because I didn't have any discomfort or bleeding. So it definitely took me by surprise. And when my provider called, this is the one who wasn't VBAC supportive, she almost sounded kind of excited as she was telling me all of the worst case scenarios and that she immediately wanted to schedule my cesarean for 36 weeks. She didn't even offer that we could have another ultrasound to see if it moved. That wasn't even in the realm of possibilities as far as I knew. So my doula, again, recommended that I switch providers, and I did. And my first meeting with them, they had my chart notes, so they knew I had the full placenta previa. And they said, let's just go through this pregnancy as if you don't have it. Let's just plan like you're going to have a VBAC. And they gave me resources to the VBAC link. And something I left out was was my doula had suggested going to a pelvic floor specialist.
Oh, amazing.
And when I brought this up to, now none of my other providers had ever mentioned this. So this was kind of new to me. I didn't realize the depth of how much a pelvic floor specialist could impact your pregnancy and your birth experience. I had no idea. No one had ever mentioned that to me, which is surprising given that I had two prior births. So I had mentioned this to my provider that wasn't VBAC supportive. And she said that there was no sense in seeing a pelvic floor specialist. She said, when you're pregnant, there's nothing they can do. It wouldn't be useful. And I'm like, well, what about for like breathing techniques or strengthening my core or pushing? And she's like, no, no. She's like, unless you're experiencing incontinence, don't. So I told my new providers this, and they promptly referred me to a pelvic floor specialist who was incredible.
That's amazing.
And around that same time, I had listened to one of your episodes where you had a pelvic floor specialist talking about trauma within our scars and how our bodies in that area hold on to experiences and how you need to work on healing that part of your body so that you can release. And it just helps with improving your whole birth experience. And that was really incredible to me. And so this new pelvic floor specialist taught me different exercises, stretches, breathing techniques. She taught me so much that I almost felt very angry that other providers just don't talk about this. I think how many other women go through pregnancies not having this very useful, valuable information. So, yeah, I saw her probably once a week. And then at my 30-week ultrasound, it showed that my placenta previa had resolved itself and I could start seeing a chiropractor. So that was really useful. And I could begin working out a little bit more intensely, you know, doing more squats. And a friend who had recently had a home birth had told me just to squat like all throughout the day. Like when I'm cooking dinner or like waiting for my tea kettle to boil or something, she's like, just squat like all day. So I was just always squatting and I was doing yoga and Pilates every morning, walking on the treadmill, just trying to stay really fit and make sure that like my core and my quads were going to be really strong for this. Because I knew that given my previous experiences, my babies and my body don't respond well to the medical interventions that we had previously used. So I knew that if I was going to achieve this, it had to be unmedicated. So I was just working out like I was preparing for a marathon. And another thing I had done was started taking needed collagen. So again, something I learned from the VBAC link.
And I love needed.
Yes, yes. And so that collagen was really good. I felt like my muscles were getting stronger and more elastic. And I was doing a lot of scar massage. And leading up to my birth, I was preparing myself in ways that I expected I would labor. So for example, every time I was on the toilet, I was finding myself doing breathing and like closing my eyes and visualizing. And when I was in my tub taking a bath, again, I'd practice my visuals and my breathing and a lot of hypnobirthing techniques. And I would listen to music that I knew would always kind of take me to a place of calm. In this case, it was Pink Floyd. So I was listening to a lot of Pink Floyd in my tub, and on my birth ball, I just close my eyes and like visualize everything. And it really helped me check out. So by the time I was 37 weeks, I started getting a lot of pretty regular contractions, which was early, given that I didn't have any contractions with my first daughter, and I didn't start getting contractions until 40 weeks with my second daughter. So even though they were just little practice contractions, every time I had one, I would close my eyes and I would visualize waves and I would practice my breathing. And that way I was telling my body that, like, every time I felt something happening, I was training my body to be calm. And a lot of that was training my face to be calm and not clenching up and really getting excited when I would feel a contraction coming on. When I was in the hospital, I had my best friend join us, and she was joking because I told her I was, like, excited, like, each time I got a contraction, and she's like, "Are you having fun?" I'm like, "Yeah." Like, it wasn't scary or anything, because I think I had envisioned what this would be like for my entire pregnancy. I had envisioned a peaceful, fun, calm labor. And so that's what it was.
Wow, Irene,
So
that's
I,
so powerful.
that is so beautiful.
yeah.
And I know a lot of VBAC moms say they are so thankful to be in labor because of that preparation. And it does become a joyful experience. It's something you practiced for. It's and your body recognizes like this is the moment, this is it. It makes your pregnancy itself more joyful and then the birth experience too. That's so
Totally.
powerful.
So around just shy of 40 weeks, I lost my mucus plug. And then, the contractions kept going this whole time from 37 weeks onward. So every day was kind of like a little bit of a tease, but I was having fun with it. I felt relaxed, and I knew that my body was taking things slowly, as I had really prayed that it would. I had prayed that things would go smoothly and slowly. And I had another friend who had suggested that anytime I was feeling discomfort or fear or any kind of pain, to offer that up for some kind of intention, a person, an event happening in the world, whatever it may be. And that really helped me redirect that. So that following Monday, I had an appointment. I was 40 weeks on that Monday, and we had weighed the pros and cons of doing a membrane sweep, and I ultimately chose the membrane sweep. After that, I went to my chiropractor. Not the contractions hadn't really changed, but then that night I had bloody show, and the contractions started becoming a little bit more regular, on and off throughout the day, being really intense at night, calm during the day. And then that Thursday, they were just continuously happening. Nothing too painful, but just consistent and long. So I took breaks napping and then speed walking on the treadmill to, like, 2011 bangers, and then doing pelvic tilts and twirls on my birth ball while listening to Pink Floyd. And eventually I called my provider just to let her know what was happening. And she said, "Because of the distance apart from your contractions and the length, why don't you come in?" So I came in. I was 6 centimeters dilated. And the hardest part of that whole night really was they were putting a wireless monitor on my belly because they knew I wanted to be in the water as much as I could. And so they had me lying on the bed while these stronger contractions were starting to come on. But I was holding a comb, again, learned from you. And I was squeezing my little comb, and I got through it. And right when they were done applying the wireless monitor, my doula and my best friend showed up. So we went right into the bathtub, started vomiting, which I took as a good sign. And my doula was blowing my face with a little hand fan. And my husband was feeding me popsicles and ginger ale. And I was really excited because this time, at this was a different hospital, they let us bring in a whole cooler of popsicles and little treats. They weren't going to starve me. So I was really, really stoked that I could have, like, a high blood sugar. And my best friend was doing the comic relief. And so at one point, I was getting, like, really sweaty. And I shifted to get onto my knees in the tub. And I had this intense contraction that squeezed me so hard, my water popped and she just slammed into my pelvis. And in that moment, I felt the urge to push. And I was like, oh. And my midwife, who was in another room, came in and she said, oh, I know that sound. Because leading up to this time, it was just the four of us in the room. There were no nurses or doctors or midwives. It was just us. It was very intimate and peaceful. And I was really grateful that they respected that wish. So I was a little bit nervous about having a cervical lip. So I had her check me, even though like I wanted to push. And she's like, go ahead. So I started pushing on the toilet, did a little pushing on my hands and knees, standing, squatting. Ultimately, I delivered on my back. I was nervous about delivering on my back and very hesitant because I was afraid of tears and I wanted gravity to do its work. But it was kind of a relief because once my water broke, the contractions were no longer painful. They felt very productive and they felt really good to push. So I was okay with being on my back. They brought out a mirror so I could see a little encouragement. And other things that I didn't ask for them to do, but they did and I really appreciated, was they were noticing little things like people getting the heat lamp ready and the little bassinet. And they said, oh, look, they're getting that ready. Your baby's coming. And then my midwife also said, you can take off your bra now. She's going to be here soon. Let's have you ready for your skin to skin. And so those little verbal cues were very encouraging because there was still a small voice in the back of my head that said, what if something happens? Even though I felt very at peace and I felt like zoned in and in control, I was still a little bit nervous. So that encouragement was really helpful. And if anyone's thinking about ways that they want their partners, doulas, providers, anyone to offer support, those verbal cues were really helpful for me and maybe helpful for other people.
Taking a quick break from our episode to share this important stat with you. Did you know a 2025 retrospective cohort study published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology found that doula care was associated with about a 15.6 increase in VBAC rates compared to those without doula support? Lily and I love doulas, and we are doulas. The VBAC Link was founded by doulas Julie Frankham and Megan Heaton, who created a comprehensive VBAC course for doulas. It's fully self-paced, completely virtual, and when you complete it, you're added to the VBAC Link doula directory. You'll also earn 8 ICEA continuing education hours and become a VBAC certified doula. And if you're a parent looking for a VBAC Link certified doula, you can find one at thevbaclink.com/findadoula. All right, let's get back to the episode.
So I pushed for about 3 hours in different positions. And when I pushed her out, yeah, it was surreal. I did end up tearing in the front and in the back, one of them being a second degree tear. But at the time, I didn't really feel it. It was, yeah, it didn't really faze me. I think I was still just too excited to really notice. So after she came out, I got to have my golden hour, the skin to skin. She latched right away. It was just peaceful. She was 8 pounds and 7 ounces. So yeah, and just sweet. And I remember a nurse coming in and being surprised that I didn't have an epidural because it was just peaceful and calm. And yeah, it was really beautiful and very, I'm really happy how things worked out.
Wow, Irene, that is just, I'm like beaming ear to ear just hearing your story. So amazing. So when you switched providers, you mentioned it was a midwife that you switched to, or was it like an mm-hmm. OB group with a midwife? Was that the direction you went?
Yeah. So it was a group of midwives. It was the URMC midwives based out of Strong Hospital in Rochester, New York. So they have some doctors, But they said they would only bring in a doctor if there was a medical emergency. Wow. So I only worked with midwives for that experience.
That is really cool. Mm-hmm. That's so awesome. So when you got the Previa diagnosis with your first provider, I would love to chat a little bit about Previa, since a lot of mm-hmm. our viewers and listeners and people ask us about Previa a lot. Did they ask you about if you'd had any discomfort? You mentioned you didn't, but did your provider give you any feedback on like what that could have looked like or what signs might have been before you got your scan?
No. She said that there could be bleeding, and she said, don't squat or do heavy lifting. She called me when I was dropping my daughter off at preschool. So it was a little bit chaotic because there were people in the background and I was like in transit. And so I was trying to listen to what seemed like very heavy information while she was going through the list of things that could go wrong. Like, for example, the placenta moving through your cesarean scar and attaching to other organs. And it was just, she was just piling on the information, I think, to support her desire to schedule me.
Yeah, that's so tough. Wow.
Yeah.
And so then you were rescanned at 30 weeks. Was there any conversation then with the new provider of if it had moved a little bit, was there a plan for a rescan even later? What did that kind of look like as that process went?
Yes. Yeah. My provider. So we actually were going to scan at 32 weeks, but I could feel my baby tickling me. And so I knew that it had moved because I wouldn't have been able to feel her tickling if it was still there. So I had asked if we could have the ultrasound a little bit earlier. And they said yes, but they said if the placenta hadn't moved, then they would do it again at 36 weeks. So it's funny because these providers were willing to give me another ultrasound at 36 weeks, whereas my previous one just wanted to have the cesarean scheduled for 36 weeks.
Yeah, it was just a one and done. She didn't even want to scan you again.
No, no, there was no talk about any possibility of looking back into that.
Wow. Ugh. I'm just glowing. It was so fun.
It is wild to me how different it can be from provider to provider. That's just a true testament to get even just a second opinion. Your information will be so different. And it's to some providers, it's cut and dry. Like, nope, that's how it is. That's just what we're going to do. Totally. And you ask questions, even your pelvic floor therapy stuff. Like, would this be beneficial? No, not really. And then you go to somewhere else and then they give you references that completely change the trajectory of your mental space and even how you are feeling physically. Mm-hmm. So did you notice
after my first C-section asking about pelvic floor PT? And I was like, oh, I think I might have diastasis. Like, what do you think? And they were like, the OB that did my surgery was like, I think it's a bunch of woo-woo. Okay. Super helpful. So
that's bonkers.
Providers are just so like off the cuff sometimes, which is so different. And I just think it's amazing that you got a second opinion. I want to know, what's your relationship like with that provider now? Did you end up going back? Do you see that provider, that unsupportive provider, as your GYN or your like gyn now? Or are you sticking with midwives?
I do plan on seeing her as my gynecologist just because she's really close by. And the midwives were a half an hour drive. And, you know, with three little ones, the time does make a difference. So I haven't seen her yet. I do have an appointment coming up. And I've been thinking about what I will say to her, because something needs to be said. I don't know if it was ignorance. I don't know if it was her trying to discourage me from having a Tolac. But I feel like something needs to be said, because her withholding that information from me could have been really harmful. It could have prevented me from having a Tolac, from having a VBAC.
Well, and then what if down the road you ended up having a repeat cesarean or scheduled one, and it was a great experience, but then you hear other stories of, oh, wait, these are the resources if you hadn't have found the feedback link, but then you found it after you were done having babies or something like that. And just always have that unanswered question of what could have been.
Well, and I felt like so strongly about why I needed to share my story, because I keep seeing on the VBAC Link Facebook pages, people bringing up placenta previa and if there's any hope, and still people bringing up VBAC after two cesarean. And so I just felt so strongly to share the whole experience and how resources and education and being okay to speak up for yourself and ask questions, how much of an impact that makes on a successful, healthy pregnancy and birth.
I wanted to just touch, maybe for listeners who don't know what that is, maybe new listeners, what placenta previa is. It's a condition in pregnancy where the placenta lies low in the uterus, and it either partially or completely, there's different types, covers the cervix, which is the opening to the birth canal. And an anatomy scan, they can see that it's there and it can move. And there is research. I'm finding some smaller studies, but there is research out there that does show it moves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the most important thing for me being a busy body was being mindful of my squats, of overexerting myself, but still maintaining a certain level of physical activity.
Yeah.
And I think that was helpful, but also I think my diet was helpful. I focused this pregnancy on a lot of roughage and protein. I think that was helpful, and supplements. And like I said, scar mobilization too, I think was helpful. So just knowing those things, knowing that there's lots of little tiny steps we can take to strengthen our bodies, to heal our bodies, while our bodies are doing an amazing feat already as it is growing a person. And then, of course, I did other things like the raspberry leaf tea and the dates. But I think the mindset was a really big part, was the visualizations right from the get-go, was envisioning what I wanted my birth to look like. And just thinking about it every single night as I fell asleep, I was listening to meditations and affirmations and breathing and thinking about what I wanted my birth to look like. And my birth looked exactly like what I had envisioned. And our minds play a huge role in this. The support from people and all of that is really useful, but for me, it was a lot of my mindset too. And I'm just maybe I have that toxic optimism, but I just always know that things are going to work out. And that was something I just knew in my core, was that this was going to happen. And it was helpful having providers and a doula saying, we're just going to plan as this is going to happen. And that was really encouraging.
Totally. Oh, wow. So much goodness, my friend. Before you leave us, we would love to know if there was one thing. You've given us so much goodness throughout this episode of going to pelvic floor PT, and all of the prep that you just mentioned was like amazing. Paige and I say this all the time, that your preparation doesn't necessarily, like if someone doesn't prepare for a VBAC, it doesn't mean that they couldn't have one, but that your preparation matters. And it did. It mattered. Like all that you did built you into the birth that like you had literally visualized in your head, which I just think is so special. If you had advice for a VBAC mom that was listening, what would be your number one piece of advice to send a VBAC mom's way? It's a hard question, I know.
that's tough. Educate yourself, you know, whatever that may be, educating yourself on safe physical activity, educating yourself on nutrition, educating yourself so you know what questions to ask providers. That was one thing. I would always bring a list of questions with me to meet with my providers. Keeping that education going, that continuous learning, there's always something that you can learn, and every little morsel can be applied to your pregnancy, your birth experience, your healing experience. So educate. there's a lot of good resources out there.
That's so
good. I love that. Irene, I love how intentional you were throughout that whole process. It's so inspiring. And your body was so familiar, and your mind too, with all that you did to practice, that you just went right into it during your labor. And even when it got really intense, like, the goal is not to take away any discomfort in our labor. It's not to just completely take all of that away, but to shift the way we think about it. And you were in such a grounded place throughout that whole process, mm-hmm. that even through 3 hours of pushing unmedicated,
that's
you
so
stayed
amazing.
Grounded. I know a lot of women in our community worry about that. Like, am I strong enough for that? So what would you say to our community?
Yeah, you're strong enough, of course. Yeah. We always surprise ourselves, don't we? Yeah, but yeah, we can do this. We're made to do this.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. Oh, well, Irene, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today and sharing your story. We appreciate you so much. It's been so fun.
My pleasure. Yes, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode and for being a part of our community. One of my favorite parts of the VBAC Link is the community itself. When I was pregnant and planning for a VBA 2C, the VBAC Link community group on Facebook truly became a virtual village for me. It's where I could see real VBAC stories, ask questions without judgment, and get encouragement from people who genuinely understood what I was preparing for. If you are planning a VBAC and want support as you get ready, head over to Facebook and search the VBAC Link community, because women of strength become even stronger together.